Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. Welcome to Species Unite, the podcast where we talk to people who are fighting one of the hardest fights on Earth to stop the unnecessary suffering of animals. I'm really excited to share today's conversation. It's with Sarah Blaine. Sarah's the founder of the Mohoots Elephant Foundation, a project in northern Thailand that blew me away. It's really, truly a model for what elephant tourism should and hopefully one day will look like. 10 years ago, Sarah and her husband Felix and their two small kids got on a plane, showed up in Thailand at an elephant trekking camp for tourists, eager to learn, to help, and to just be a part of things. But shortly after they arrived, they realized something was really off. The elephants were miserable. The conditions were terrible. And the Mohoots, the guys who train and handle the elephants, were living in abject poverty and in a cycle they just couldn't get out of, living in these little tiny shacks, barely able to afford to eat or take care of their families. And so Sarah looked at Felix and they quickly left and went to another camp, and things weren't much better. And this set them on a 10-year journey. And the first few years, they just learned. They went to camps, they went to sanctuaries, they spoke to tons of Mohoots, they went to different villages where elephants originally, a lot of them came from. And then they found a Karen village up in the north. And so they created the Mohoots Elephant Foundation, which is an 8,000-acre sanctuary for rescued elephants, where both the Mohoots and the elephants can be safe and free. In Thailand, there's only 6,000 elephants left. They're critically endangered everywhere. And half the elephants in Thailand are captive, half are wild. The wild elephants live in national parks, and the captive elephants pretty much work in tourism and entertainment. And they have pretty hard lives. Some of them have unbearable lives. And so that is what Sarah and Felix decided they wanted to change in any way that they could. The reason so many elephants have ended up working in tourism and entertainment is because in the 80s, logging became illegal. And when it did, a lot of elephants and their Mohoots, well, all of them, out of work. And for the handlers, this was the only way they knew how to survive. It was generational. Their fathers had done, their grandfathers, and back beyond. And so they fled to the cities, and a lot ended up begging in the streets in Bangkok, and a lot ended up in tourism. And most of the tourist places aren't so great, which I didn't really know this either. I mean, you know, like a version of it, but I didn't know how bad. And so even though it was good that logging ended, it wasn't so good for the elephants. Their situations in a lot of cases ended up worse. When I arrived in this small Karen village up in northern Thailand, and I looked around and I wondered, well, where are the elephants? And I didn't realize Sarah's model of tourism is very different. There were no elephants until the next morning when we had to go find them, which meant we hiked through the forest for hours. It's 100 degrees. We were trudging up hills. And a few hours later, we came down a hill and there was elephants all in front of me. Two of them playing in the mud and wrestling. Everybody else was just eating and foraging. I was so astounded to just be on this crazy hike. And then all of a sudden, these beautiful, enormous creatures were just right there. We followed them up and down hills. We trekked through the forest. We watched them eat and play and interact. It felt like this enormous gift of just being dropped into this incredible world and being allowed to witness it without feeling like you were imposing and without feeling like you were in any way getting in their way. And this is the model Sarah's created. And since then, they've opened up a second project. And hopefully they're going to open up a third and a fourth and a fifth, and many other people will replicate what they're doing.
Through a contact of ours, a Karen gentleman that we've known for a long time, we were led to this community and came up here for a visit. We went out to the forest here with the retired chief of the village, and saw something just so remarkable. We'd never seen captive elephants living in the way that they live here. We could see how happy and thriving the community was, and how deeply they cared for their elephants, that they really wanted the absolute best for their elephants. They didn't really want them working in the cities in tourism. They wanted them back in these forests because they know it's the best place for them. So, we saw very high welfare standards, a great sort of life for the elephants, giving them all of their life opportunities out here. And then spent about a year in conversations with the village, just talking and planning and how would we develop a project here? What would that look like? What sort of, we very much work in partnership, so we don't come in and really tell people what's the best way to do things, because they know this is their community, it's their elephants. It's very important that we work together and respect that. And our footprint is very important within these communities, that we're not damaging or disrupting things, that we come in and as much as possible work side by side.
Tell us how you and Felix went from living in the UK to starting a project and foundation in Northern Thailand.
Okay, so it all started around 10 years ago when we did a volunteering project as a family. So that was myself, Felix, my husband, and our two children, who were very young at the time. We did a volunteer project in an elephant trekking camp, which is a traditional sort of place where elephants give rides with the chair on their back to tourists. The project was set up supposedly to help the elephants and to give them a break from work, but it didn't really work in doing that. What we saw when we were there was just the absolute misery of everybody, both elephants and the mahouts who had left their homes to work in the cities. The elephants were located in cities where there's obviously no natural habitat, no access to food. They're in very small confined spaces, so they end up living on very short chains when they're not working, and the rest of the time is just pacing around in circles, giving rides on their backs to people. And the mahouts and their families who leave their beautiful homes and come to these cities end up living in tiny little shacks that have no protection from the elements, no running water, just living in absolute poverty. So we spent many years researching the situation, and our journey took us over many years to Karen Hill tribe communities, who traditionally have kept elephants in vast areas of forest and have very, very high welfare standards for the elephants. But a lot of these families were being forced to leave because there was no income. Logging had been banned many years ago, and they were leaving the forests in search of work to hang on to their culture, hang on to the elephants. We're absolutely amazed when we saw the forest that the elephants could be living in, and the mahouts in their beautiful villages. And we came up with a model that we felt really helped people and elephants, of returning these elephants back home to the big forests, and at the same time you would return the mahout and their families back to their villages. So we now work in partnership with Karen communities, and our first project has been running since August 2015, and we've created a new model for tourism. So we bring small groups of tourists up to the village. They learn about the culture, they immerse in village life, and then they go out to the forest to just simply watch the elephants. They just observe them living completely naturally.
And for people that don't really understand, will you talk about what a mahout is, and how, you know, they've been doing this work for generations, and what's happened since tourism?
So mahouts, many, many years ago, used to be very sort of revered in Asian societies. They were the people that could look after the elephants. They could handle the elephants. They were very sort of looked up to. Since the advent of elephant tourism, elephants have become very accessible to the masses, really, of tourists from all over the world. And a mahout to us is a man sort of with many generations of knowledge behind him. It's in his family. He'll have grown up with elephants since he was a boy, and it's almost a gift, and they have something within them that just enables them to work gently with elephants. But with the advent of this mass tourism in the cities, you know, people with very little experience are often employed because they're cheaper, and they're called mahouts, but really they don't have that skill and that knowledge and that gentleness within them, and the pressures of work and having to make the elephant do things that it may not want to do often leads to sort of poor welfare and abusive situations.
People are still riding elephants at all these camps.
Yeah.
But everyone, like, it feels like most people I've talked to who are working for the good and on the good side of all of this had experiences where they didn't know. They went, they rode, and then they realized, like, wait, what's going on here?
Yeah, I think from the very start, we were uncomfortable with it. It didn't feel right. We did go in the south of Thailand first. We started at a beach holiday and were encouraged to take a ride in chairs on the back of the elephants. And we did it, and it was just a miserable experience, really. I think we just felt deeply that it wasn't right, you know. And then we went on to join the project. And we're surrounded by about 30 very, very unhappy, sad-looking elephants who were covered in wounds and scars and having to be controlled to be in that environment. You know, they're surrounded by tourists all day, every day, who are screaming and shouting. There's nothing remotely like natural habitat there, so they have nothing to eat. They're told off if they touch a blade of grass in the gardens. They can't touch other elephants. It was really dawning on us that this was a miserable experience. The volunteer program was set up so that we were partnered with one mahout, one elephant. And the idea was that the volunteers were somehow different to the tourists in that they were sort of doing more of a learn to be a mahout type activity. So that would be riding on the elephant's neck and learning the commands. I mean, it's a ridiculous program, really, because you can't learn to be a mahout like that. I mean, it's just crazy. And we felt uncomfortable with it. You know, we did try to work with that project to try to help them to change things, but it wasn't really to be. They didn't really want to see that change. So I think, you know, as the years went by and we researched more, we found any project we could that were doing things differently in a more respectful way of elephants and mahouts, that we learned over time, you know, that there really could be another way, that this isn't right. It's not offering any kind of welfare to elephants. It's the lowest standard, and we should be trying much harder to get them into better situations.
It's the lowest standard, yet it's the norm, correct? This is the majority of Thai captive elephants?
Yeah, I mean, it has changed. There's been a lot of campaigning over the years of, you know, the worst end of things, which is sort of the show side of things where they do the tricks and performances and the chair riding. So the industry has diversified a little. So, you know, popular activities now would be not chair riding, but maybe riding on the neck of the elephant. And then there are places now that offer just sort of bathing with the elephants or feeding the elephants. But, you know, still the space those elephants have access to is not really been addressed. And what is welfare? You know, I mean, we passionately believe that welfare is all of the foraging behavior, all of the freedom to access their own food when they want to, eat what they want to in a vast area of forest that has all of that food available, you know, to bathe in rivers alone with other elephants and to do that when they want to do it, and to be covered in mud all the time if that's what they want to do. You know, they don't need to be showered by people, and really we don't promote any kind of feeding of elephants at all. Feeding can lead to, you know, really odd behavior in elephants. If they see tourists, then they start charging towards them expecting food all the time, and you don't want that abnormal behavior.
And I would imagine too, they want to be with their own families and have that sort of social interaction, not being bathed by strangers. It's almost like it's become an adult petting zoo.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I watching our elephants, they don't take any notice. When we have tourists come,
the elephants don't really look at people. You know, they want to be with elephants. They want to be with their own kind, and they absolutely should be, you know. And you're right, you know, it becomes like, I've got to touch the elephant from the tourist perspective. I've got to feed it. I've got to have that interaction. Well, we need to change that because, you know, these are wild animals. They're not animals that should be in a petting zoo, really. You know, they're not our cats and dogs. They're not domesticated. And we should give them the right to that autonomy as those wild animals. It's very strange to me. I mean, I was at a conference recently and, you know, even there I was challenged by people that really want the best for elephants, but they didn't understand when I said, I don't touch the elephants when I'm there. You know, when I go and I'm working at the projects, I never touch the elephants. I don't have any need to, you know, they don't want me touching them. They just want to live in that forest. They need to be eating for 18 hours a day. That's a lot of time eating. It's not just about eating, you know, it's about the whole preparation of that food and being a family behavior and a social behavior. So that's the stuff they need to be getting on with doing, not interacting with tourists.
When I was with you this spring, I had the privilege to meet Manit. Truly, he was absolutely incredible. His knowledge as a botanist and a naturalist. And he's kind of what represents mahouts, why they were so looked up to and revered. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Manit represents, you know, a generation of mahouts that one day won't be with us. You know, he's that real elder generation. He's 64 years old. He's worked with elephants since he was a very tiny boy, learning from his father and his grandfather. He's never worked in the tourist industry, interestingly. You know, his history was before the days of the logging ban, and he used to log with a couple of the elephants. But in the right hands, logging was not really an abusive activity. I mean, it was obviously not good for the forest because the forest should not have been chopped down in that way. But, you know, if they looked after their elephant, then the elephant would spend all of its life in the forest. It would work for a few days a week, having many, many months off of not working during rainy season, just roaming in the big forests. So Manit really holds a lot of knowledge that from the generations before him. He understands elephants.
And he's in and out of that forest and up and down those hills after those elephants, always seems to know exactly where they are. There is a certain like magic about what those mahouts do. It's really incredible to be near.
Yeah. And now, you know, since you were there, the elephants are in a much bigger area of forest and they're in a really vast area. And Manit, you know, he walks that every single day in and out of that forest. So, yeah, he's an incredibly fit individual.
So tell me, because one amazing story that you told me while I was there about yourself or your family was the story about your grandmother. And it made me start thinking about tough women and how that she got hit by the bus and she got up and just took off, right? It feels very like there's a line of very tough women in your family.
My grandmother was a very tiny Irish lady. And my mother tells the story still. My mother's now in her early 80s, but she remembers my grandmother going up to the local shop and coming back and being hit by a bus. The bus driver stopped, jumped out, and this little lady had disappeared. Got up and walked home. And then my mum had a knock on the door and the bus driver was at the door saying, I've just hit a little old lady. Has she come into this house? And my grandmother was in the house quite happy.
It takes a lot to be living in the UK and say, you know what? We have to do more. We're going to go to the middle of Northern Thailand in the forest and create a project. Did you grow up with like an adventure kind of childhood or animals in your childhood?
Always surrounded by animals, as in pets. So we always had cats and dogs around. I was always quite obsessed with elephants growing up, but never believed that I would work with them. And I kind of had always dismissed that because I didn't really want to work for another organization that was doing it. I just always felt I had to do it in my own way if I ever did anything. So I kind of always dismissed it as something I would do. And then I think when we went as a family, and a sort of just, I don't know, it was just a life-changing moment, I guess, really, for all of us. I think my husband is very, very a lover of big forests and protecting wildlife. And he really sees the need to, you know, protect these huge forests. Having captive elephants living in the forest is a really, you know, a good way to save these forests, because they then won't be chopped down for farming or agriculture. So I think it was always within me. I guess it just took a long time for me to find my path, really, having done a lot of other jobs. Travel wasn't hugely in my background. As a child, we didn't really travel an awful lot, and my family don't travel, so it's quite a new thing, I guess. But I have a steely determination in me. If I decide to do something, then, yeah, I tend to like to get it done.
Two things that really stuck out to me about your elephants. One is, I didn't know, I probably should have, that elephants were such good climbers and that they literally go up and down the mountains like mountain goats. I was stunned to see. How little research is done on Asian elephants. Can you talk about that for a second?
Yeah, I mean, I think African elephants, there's been a lot more research because they're much easier to see. So when you're out in the savannah, you know, you can sort of observe them. Asian elephants are very, very tricky to research, because if they're truly wild, they're very difficult to locate and to see in these dense forests they live in. There's been a lot of sort of research on Asian elephants done in very captive situations, such as zoos, but we're not really seeing then, you know, the potential of the natural behaviours that we want to see. And this is why the research we're doing, which started last summer and is continuing and will continue over many years, it's so, so vital.
So the new project is called LIFE, Living in the Forest with Elephants.
Yeah.
That community reached out to you and said, because they knew what you were doing. Is this how LIFE started?
Yes, exactly. So it was a young man from the community. He's actually a remarkable individual. He was quite sick as a baby and almost didn't survive. Him and his brother are the only surviving children from 15 of that family. There were 15 children and only two survived. There's a very high mortality rate at this community because it's incredibly remote.
Where is it? It's near Myanmar?
It's on the Myanmar border, yeah. And they've just had a road built up there in the last sort of 3 years, which is making things easier, but still they're very poor and they don't really have any vehicles in the village at all. But he went away to high school and did incredibly well. He's a very intelligent young man. He's in his late 20s now. He was head boy and got a scholarship to a university in Bangkok and got a degree there. He's very proud to be Karen and is absolutely passionate about helping his community to protect the forest, the culture, and to protect their elephants living in that forest. He's actually worked a lot in elephant tourism in the city. He's seen the other side of things. He wanted to help the community as he could see the elephants just leaving very quickly over the last few years. There's been a combination of issues there with elephants leaving because there's no, the village is so poor, and also the lower villages. So this village is on the top of a mountain, but the lower villages have turned to corn farming in desperation to get money, which is destroying the forest. And that's literally about 12 kilometers away from the forest we're trying now urgently to protect up there by keeping the elephants there. We're very proud and honored that he chose us, to turn to us and asked for our help. And he wants to start by helping his community, but he wants to work with us, the foundation, to then reach out to many, many more villages. And he really has the skills to do that.
And are you bringing people there yet?
Well, no, we're just preparing. I was the first foreigner really to go there. So, I mean, I think that kind of highlights sort of how new this is to them. They're a very remote cut-off community. So the starting point in terms of tourism there was, you know, everybody that wanted to be involved, which is actually the whole village. They're very, very super keen on this. But we had to train everybody up and we've had to legally get all of the homestays registered. So we're still doing that process. We want our research team to go there as well. So we want these elephants to be part of the research. There's a lot going on the ground behind the scenes, but we're really, really getting there. It's a very exciting project. It's incredibly beautiful up in a cloud forest with a beautiful golden temple at the top of the mountain. And it's going to be phenomenal once we get things underway.
I can't wait to come see it. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for talking to me. I'm so excited for what you are doing. Thank you for all the work you guys do.
Thank you very much.
To learn more about Sarah, or even better, to go visit one of her projects, go to Mahouts, mahouts.co.uk. While I was in Thailand meeting with elephant advocates, I met one who asked me if I knew what was happening to the horses in the American West. And I knew that things were bad for them, but I didn't know the details, nor did I know just how dire their situations are. So I went to California and I met with two of the women behind the American Wild Horse Campaign, Ellie Phipps Price and Suzanne Roy, who we'll hear from in our next two episodes. Next week, we'll hear from Ellie on how the government is doing everything in their power to eliminate these horses and what we can do to stop it.
I mean, seeing these horses on the trucks, they're packed on these trucks. They're not used to being this close together. They're next to horses that they don't know. They're very stressed, and their eyes looking out at the land that they once lived on is one of the saddest things I've ever seen in my life, actually. It's very strange. It just feels so wrong.
That was Ellie Phipps Price from the American Wild Horse Campaign. Thank you for listening to Species Unite. Our website is speciesunite.com. We are also on Instagram and Facebook at Species Unite. I want to thank everyone who made today's episode possible, including Gary Knudsen, our producer and editor, Natalie Martin for all things digital and social media, and Anna Kallner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thanks again, and have a great day.